This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 206. Sometimes you just want a bazooka. This is Electric Sisterhood, home of the best,
the fucking best,
girl gaming, tech gadget, and anime podcast. I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to yet another kick-ass episode of our weekly podcast. How you guys doing?
I don't feel too good.
Yeah, you got a little bit too much of the sun.
I did.
See, sometimes the outside
is bad.
It takes revenge on you for not visiting more often.
No.
You know, it's like an in-law. You only see me twice a year? I'm gonna get you. But you know what never seeks revenge on you?
Our website.
That's right. It is a warm, cuddly, cozy, embracing space for you. So make sure that you get in there. Because if you don't, you're missing out. So visit us on the web at www.electricsisterhood.com. Or you can use the short address, which is...
ESH.mobi. That's ESH.mobi. The short address will bounce to the long one, and you can check out any articles that have been written within the week. If you have any questions about those articles, or even just questions for us, you can email us at questions@esh.mobi. If you aren't listening to us on iTunes, then subscribe.
That's right. The link's on the website, people. If you want to make sure that you're getting brand new, fresh, hot eshness each week, then you gotta subscribe to us in iTunes, so you'll get it the moment that we put it out on the wire.
I mean, and if you don't want to do that, you can plug us into any RSS reader or any podcast search engine. And don't forget to listen to some great shows that come out of the ESH camp.
That's right. The Land of Esh is up and running, folks. So make sure that you're taking advantage of not only the awesome geekitude and nerdness that we're pumping out each week on Mondays, but that you follow that up with the brand new episodes of the Boston Bastard Brigade podcast, which go out on Tuesdays. And then nerding it up even more, Wednesday, bam, Geek Agrocast, which happens to be co-hosted by our very own Deuces Wild. So you got Boston Bastard Brigade, which is co-hosted by King Baby Duck. You got Geek Agro, co-hosted by Deuces Wild. And then you got us on the flagship holding down the nerdiness. I mean, really, we get you through the week. And if that's not enough, well, there's all the stuff that we write on the respective websites. You can buy our magazine to take the nerdiness with you when you're away from the internet. That's right, both in analog and digital form. $5.99 gets you 28 pages full of awesomeness. So make sure that you're jumping on that, people.
And don't complain about the price either, because it's mad cheap.
It's crazy cheap. For as much awesome as we pack into each issue, we're basically doing ourselves a disservice of giving it to you that cheap. But you know what? We still got to mail it to you. So that's why it has a price. Otherwise, you know, it might be free. But here's the thing. You get enough things free. There's water. There's air. You can pay for the eshness.
And love. I mean, I guess love is free.
No, sometimes you got to pay for love. By the hour.
It's not love if you got to pay for it.
It could be love. It just depends on where you're getting it from. You know what? That's another podcast. That is another podcast. We will do that show at some point in time, but we really ought to get into this one.
Why not?
There really isn't anything that we've not talked about.
Yeah.
There's only like one topic that we've pretty much ever said internally was off the table.
Yeah, that's right.
So... and that wasn't it. So at some point in time, we'll probably do a whole show on prostitution. But that is not this show. This show is all about games and goodness and anime and nerdiness. So let's jump into it.
All right, let's go.
I know you've got some anime that you've been watching.
Yes, I have. Finally. It's been a very long time.
Well, you know, it's been difficult finding stuff that, one, is available in more than just a... 3-episode pack in the U.S. and two that's worthwhile. But I know that you've kind of gone anime crazy. So what do you
as of late, yeah. So I know the last few episodes we've talked about Maria watches over us, or at least you have with my commentary.
I mentioned it because we got recommended by it.
Yes, and you had already mentioned it before the recommendation.
And I talked about it, I think, back in, like, episode 118 or something like that. I don't know, because I don't listen to our podcast. But I talked about it a while ago. And then Trinity Thousand asked us a question and also suggested some. So we brought it up there, and I told you right after the show.
Yeah, I know. I literally, with my Amazon gift card, went and bought the first season during the show.
Okay.
I mean, I've gotten that, and I also got the complete collection of Romeo X Juliet. And absolutely, like, fell in love with Maria Watches Over Us. As you said, as you predicted to be true.
I know my shit.
And, I mean, not, like, the first few episodes, you know, I was like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if I'm going to like this too much. I'm like, it's a little too sweet, waiting for some, you know. And then I realized that, you know, the first two episodes, I mean, really great series come right out of the gate with something that's going to intrigue an audience or immerse an audience. And this, at first, like I said, I was a little skeptical because it wasn't an instant draw. I got through the first three episodes, and at the third episode, I was like, okay, I'm in. So it took two episodes, and I was very surprised because usually by the first episode, if I'm not in it, I won't finish.
you said it.
I did. But I was watching it with Eshmom, you know, because I already knew it kind of had a hint of Yuri in it. So, I mean, I gave
a hint of Yuri.
Well, yes. I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure if it was going to come out the gate, you know, with, hey, Vag is great, yay, or if it was going to be like, oh, we're girls, and I like touching you. You like touching me? And then, like that. So I wasn't sure which way I was going to go. You know, so of course, when I put them up in front of Eshmom, I'm like, I will watch one of these with you. Which is it? And I was praying to the anime gods that she was going to choose Romeo X Juliet, because I was so worried that I'd be revisiting that time when I watched certain things with Eshmom that you shouldn't watch with your mother.
You should never watch hentai with your mom. So I don't care how cool your mom is.
Yeah, well.
I've learned my lesson.
But when she put her, you know, she tapped, you know, Maria, she's like, this one looks really cute. And I'm like, oh, it's cute, all right. I'm like, I'm letting you know right now, Mom, that it's got Yuri in it. And she's like, is that the boy stuff? And no. This is the girl stuff. And she's like, we watched the L Word. This is okay. And I'm like, oh, boy. But we got through the first two DVDs of the four set. And, I mean, we got into it. I mean, there's so much feminine intrigue going on. Like, this is so not for boys. Boys should never look at this. Like, don't look at it. Don't think about it. It's really not meant for you. It is not painted in a shade that you would like, unless you're one of those guys who really likes girls' drama and likes...
Hey,
likes
there girls. Are guys that like the lady drama.
Yes, and the ones that do, that's great. But regular guys who like their shonen and they like their freaking Naruto.
Hey, some guys like the girl-on-girl action, so don't...
I don't know.
Don't just make judgments. Don't just cast a broad net. Okay? Fellas, I'm sticking up for you. I know how much you like the lady on lady. You like the lady drama.
All right.
As long as it doesn't involve your baby mama.
Anyway. But, I mean, it's got so much feminine tension and feminine intrigue. So, I mean, that's why I definitely know that this is totally shoujo. This is totally meant for the pining girl at home. Like, this, it really was. And I was just like, okay. So I'm like, this is all internal mental intrigue mixed with some physical tension, you know. And then when they start going into, you know, the other sister's stories, I was like, oh, my God. I'm like, this is so much more involved than I was expecting it to be, you know. And you really feel yourself, you know, clamoring for these girls, and you want to see them succeed in the stuff that they're, what's ever going on at, you know, what is it, Lillian's?
Yes.
Yeah. So you're just like, oh my God, like, oh, I'm like, please overcome your shyness. please open yourself up like the beautiful flower that you are. And
yes, open your budding flower. Wait. I can't. No. Yeah, I do want you to do that.
Yeah.
Right now.
Like, between the two protagonist and, you know, her companion. I don't know. I didn't get the same, oh my god, I want these guys to, like, bone right now. But I could definitely...
You haven't gotten to the second season yet.
I'm about to say, I'm like, probably by season two, I'm like, okay, humping should happen now.
Why are you not humping her?
More or less.
Oh, you will get...
I mean, fucking Gigantia, though. Rosa Gigantia. Oh my god.
Okay, so you should probably explain the Rose system.
All right, so they're like the student council of the school. And there are three. The Rose ladies. And their names are... three different kinds of roses. So, I mean, if you know anything about, you know, flowers and plants and herbology, then you know the differences between the roses. And believe it or not, these flowers actually are supposed to attribute to something about the girl that is named after them. So, Gigantia is this, I think she's the white flower, the white rose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she's got this shorter, not like boy short hair, but her hair's a little shorter than... you know, like that shaggy short, like, in a lot of animes, like the sporty girl will have like kind of spiky.
Right. Where it sort of looks like Sora's hair from.
Yes.
Kingdom Hearts. Like,
yes.
Yes.
You know, so, and she's kind of got hair like that and she's very overt about, yep, I like chicks. Like she seems to like everybody, but when there are certain girls around,
she's okay with boys, but she likes the ladies.
Yeah. You know, and she's got this, you know, this petite sister, you know, who's beautiful and she's elegant and, you know, she's, I wouldn't say too greatly refined, but I mean, she's definitely the polar opposite of Rosa Gigantia.
Yeah. Shimiko actually is her family runs a shrine. And so she's like a shrine maiden.
Yeah. So, I mean, she's just very, you know.
But you find that out later on.
She's demure.
Yes.
Very, very demure. And, you know, you'd think that, you know, Gigantia's going to be all up in her snitch-snatch. And it's really funny because.
Did you just say snitch-snatch?
Yes, I did. I really thought, I was like, oh, okay, I get this powerful female, quiet shy. Let me tear that shit off right quick. Bam, bam, we're done. But she hasn't touched her. I mean, as far as we've seen, really.
And she barely really interacts with her.
With her. Like, yeah, she really, you know, and, you know, you're kind of going, well, then why did she choose her? Like, I mean, I think that's my biggest question, is why did these three roses choose the girls who are now going to become the roses? Like, I want to know the choosing system. Like, what really defines when someone's chosen?
Right, because the three big sisters, because it's basically a big sister, little sister
thing, yes.
System. And so the big sisters, who are the upperclassmen in school, choose a first year student to be their little sister. And they basically groom them to, one, be not perfect ladies, but to grow up and really develop into strong, what society deems as.
And it's not even
perfect.
Just that, though. Because, I mean, there were some, like, they show some, you know, red shirts. And I'm going to say red shirts because, they're always, like, in pan shots or montage shots. And, I mean, some of these little sisters, like, come in with the same kind of interest as a big sister that they end up getting, you know, later on. Like, the newspaper. Their newspaper that they have on the campus. Like, one of the pairings that you see is the big sister to the other one. So, like, if their interests tend to be the same, they tend to groom them into that interest also. So, I mean, like, it really depends on who the big sister is and who she chooses. So, I mean, the choice system's really interesting. Some people go for the complete opposite of who they are. And some people are able to look into, you know, like in Sachiko's place, when she was the little sister to the now Rosa Chinsiesia or whatever? The red rose?
Rosa Gigantia.
Is the white one.
Rosa Kinesis.
She was the... No. She's not really a sister. She's not really one of the... She didn't become one of the council.
So I'm just going over the Rose families.
Yeah.
You have Gigantia.
Yep.
You have Kinesis. Yep. And you have Fetida.
Yeah, those three. And then remember, there was that other Rose that was trying to become one of the elected
officials. Those are the three families.
Yes.
Okay, of Roses. And then within the three families, you have the big sister and then the little sister thing.
Yeah.
Okay, but those are the only three actual Rose families in the council.
Yeah.
Okay, there are other big sister, and not necessarily big sister, little sister, but mentor-mentee relationships that are set up, like the newspaper one that you're talking about.
Yeah.
There are also some on the sports teams. But those three flower families are the ones that drive the anime and are really kind of looked up to as being the big sister, little sister things at Lillian Academy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think we shouldn't say that exactly, because there are big sister, little sister relationships that are lesser than those. Because remember when in the turmoil with the yellow family, like when that issue happened, then all the other people who had like mentorships going on started breaking off theirs.
Right, but those aren't, just to be clear, in the series, those aren't big sister, little sisters. Like, they don't talk about each other necessarily as being big sisters and little sisters outside of the Rose Council.
Yeah, yeah. They're just like following the trend, I guess, in a sense.
Because they don't and aren't big sisters and little sisters, but they want to emulate the women on the Flower Council so much. So that happens. Yeah. So that way you don't get confused. Because otherwise, if you think everybody's got a big sister and little sister, then it's like, well, then why are these three better than the other ones? So it's not. It's more kind of mentor-mentee outside of the Rose family.
Yeah, they're just following the trend. Which is why when that break happened, a bunch of people started breaking off their mentor-mentee relationships because they thought it was growing out of it.
Right.
So, but I mean, I loved it. I definitely loved the intrigue. And like, out of all the sisters, because I mean, right now you've really only seen what's going on with, you know, Gigantia. Like, I mean, you're looking at Sachiko, Lady Sachiko, as she's going to obviously become, you know, the Rose, what is it, Chinsis? What was that one, the red one? Not Fortia, not Gigantia. Kinesis. So she's going to become Rose, you know, Kinesis. And, you know, so she's not it yet. So, I mean, I want to see what's going on with the actual Red Rose. Like, I want to understand what her why she chose Sachiko. And, I mean, she's already kind of alluded to it once or twice when you've seen her on screen, you know, where she's just kind of like, when I met her, she was so withdrawn, you know, she was great at everything, you know, because her family pushed her to excel in all these things. And I made her quit those because she could not, like, she wasn't a complete person. Sachiko, I mean, in my opinion, from the way that, you know, she was talking, mm-hmm. you know, the Red Rose, is that, you know, this, she was so bound up in everything that she had to do that she had no real idea of who she was. She only knew of what she did. And without those things, she was incomplete. So, you know, I think that's why, in my opinion, that's why the Red Rose chose her. And that's, and I mean, you see the struggle between Sachiko and, now her name is escaping me.
Yumi,
there it is. Because Yumi, in the same sense, even though she's not as, I'd say, as refined as Sachiko is, the families are definitely completely different. But you see the same kind of struggle between Yumi and Sachiko that Sachiko had with her big sister. So, I mean, I think that would also be kind of, you know, the reason why Sachiko chose Yumi, and also, you know, slightly stress.
Well, let's be clear. Okay, Sachiko chose Yumi because she either needed to pick a little sister because she had run out of time in order to stay on the board, or because the rest of the council was blackmailing her into picking a little sister, she was going to have to participate in this event where she was going to have to get up close and personal, kind of.
With a boy,
which she was desperate to not have to do.
Yes.
That's where it started.
I don't know. I know that was the premise for her to truly pursue it. But, I mean, obviously,
that was the catalyst. Now, it changes as you watch the series. Yeah. But that was definitely the catalyst. which I thought was really kind of comical. Because I, you know, a lot of times in series like this, when you've got a lot of Yuri going on, there's usually no defining thing that explains why at all any of these characters are interested in girls at all. And I have no problem with girl-on-girl action. I really don't. But I just want to understand a little bit of why it's happening. Like, I don't want to just be like, okay, everybody's here is a lesbian. Awesome. And go. Like, I would like a little bit of explanation. Like,
yes. You
know, hey, this one was in a series of bad relationships with guys, so now she's trying out girls. Oh, okay. Well, let's see where this goes. You know? And so it's always kind of jarring to me to be in a series and be like, hey, all right, we just like girls. Yay. Not that there's anything wrong with liking girls. I'm just saying.
No, but
I just want a little bit of understanding. I want to understand your motivation.
I'd like to know the premise of each, where each one came from.
You know, so I kind of like the fact that, you know, you spend some time in this series exploring not only why Sachiko has this, really, as it comes off, deathly fear of being around boys. And it's not really clear or made clear for a long time that she just really, really dislikes the idea of being intimate with a boy, that she just doesn't like guys in general, or is she really just attracted to females? It's just spent a lot of time, at least in the first season, that she's more comfortable.
Yeah. I mean,
so then you want to know, why isn't she comfortable around dudes? And so there's that wanting to know and understand that I enjoyed in the series.
Yeah. I mean, I'm only, like I said, I've only gone through the first season, so, I mean, I'm still learning all this. But, I mean, I'm liking the fact that they're going for, you know, they're explaining the story through, you know, not only the relationship between Yumi and Lady Sachiko. I mean, you're seeing all the different, you know, roses interacting with each other and or their little sisters. So, I mean, and you even get some backstory of the roses when they were maybe the little sisters to who they took the place of, like with Gigantia. I mean, they really, at the end of the series, go into Gigantia's story more than anybody else's. And I kind of hope that into the second season, you start seeing into, you know, Kinesis and what's the other one for Fortuna? The
Yoshino?
No. The
Fetida is...
Fetida
is the third family. And in that, you have Ray, who's the sword fighting.
Yeah, she actually kind of reminds me of Sailor Uranus because she's got short, boyish hair.
Yeah. And so Ray is the big sister, and she's into the sword fighting stuff.
No, she's into kendo. This is true, but she likes to knit. And
Well, I wasn't going to give that away.
I did.
Yeah, but you did. But she's like the captain of the kendo team, and she's amazing at kendo, but she really just likes to do super, super girly things. But because she looks like such a boy and she's so good at kendo, like all the girls in school fawn over Ray because she's so amazing. And really all she wants to do is just like knit and bake and cook, but falls into this role. And then you have Yoshino, who is her little sister, is actually her cousin.
Yep. Don't let that fool you, because in a lot of animes, cousins marry cousins.
Yeah, let's remember we're talking anime here. Incest is okay.
Is A-okay.
Ta-ching! But I kind of enjoy their relationship a lot, and you'll spend time in the first two series, seasons of the series, definitely, exploring more of the relationships between the little sisters and big sisters and really find out who really truly has feelings of love for their big sister, little sister swap, and who really just has great deep friendship feelings. Because it's not all about getting in people's panties.
In their snitch-snatches.
It's not all about the snitch-snatch. It's mostly about the snitch.
Contrary to popular belief.
But seriously, it's about the snitch.
But anyway, I mean, I have thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. You know, out of the first season, I'll probably be ordering the second season through Amazon probably by the end of this episode. But let me talk a little bit about another one that I was actually kind of surprised about. Everyone was talking about Romeo x Juliet, not this year at Anime Boston because I didn't go, but the year before. They'd even done like a masquerade like skit about it. And I'd seen that, and I'm like, that looks really interesting. But obviously, walking into anything that says Romeo and Juliet in it, you kind of have an idea of where
this
could possibly go. So you're like, all right, I kind of have an idea of what the ending is going to be, but I want to know how you get to the ending. So, I mean, and every time, you know, I load this up, it always, you know, it says based on the, you know, the play by William Shakespeare.
Shakespeare!
And then I go through the episode, and I'm like, yeah, I'm sure William did not vision this great work like this. So I don't know if I like the idea of based at all, because, I mean, outside of names, like the ruling family's names, names of important people, and in the most, you know, the very, very, very ending of the series, none of any of the rest of it has anything to do with the original play. Absolutely not.
For more of it to say loosely based.
Yeah, it should just say buh. It shouldn't even say
buh on a foot by Shakespeare.
So, I mean, you get these two families, you get Capulets, and you get the Montagues. And, you know, if you haven't read the play yet, then...
obviously, you did not graduate from school.
Probably not. And you know what? You don't have to, but you should still read it.
Get your GED, people.
Go out there and read it, please. Please. If you watch this and think that this is what's in the play, then you're sadly mistaken.
This is not a replacement for Cliff's Notes.
Nope.
If you think that it will be, you are wrong. You will fail the test. You will suck
horribly.
At life.
You will fail it horribly. But in this scenario, the Capulets are this ruling family. And one night, you know, now Juliet's probably like 2. And this one night, she wakes up from this horrible dream, and she has this handmaiden named Cordelia, who's like, I want to say like 6. And she's leading Juliet to her
parents. And my handmaiden usually always is only 4 years older than me at any given point in my life. To take care of me, because, you know, a 6-year-old can take such great care of a 2-year-old.
I mean, there's so many things I have with this series.
Anime!
Kids caring for kids. It works. And she's leading Juliet to her parents because she had a bad nightmare. And as they're slowly making it towards the throne room, you see that these rebel forces led by Montague, you know, who you find out later is like becomes Prince Montague because he slays the Capulet family. And he decides that he's going to kill everybody. Like, he was just stabbing people. People just be dying and shit. And you're like, holy shit, they're going to go kill Juliet. And you're like, wait a minute, I read the play. That's not how this is going to happen.
Yeah, they can't kill Juliet because then she can't die at the end. So he's going to have some kind of moment of, oh, I can't be killing babies. Oh,
not even. Nope. He sends minions to go and kill her. You know, so of course these two little girls are now running away from the parents who are now bleeding and dead on the floor. And they're about to get stabbed with this really cool old-looking guy. Well, he's really old when you see him later, but he's, like, an older, like, he's the captain of the guard, Conrad. Uh-huh. And he slashes them up, and he beats the dudes up, and he gets onto his dragon steed, which kind of looks like a horse and dragon together.
I thought horses it was and dragons laying together. Mass hysteria! Wait. That's not right.
No, but it was really funny because at first when I saw one flying around, I'm like, they're flying on chimeras? Really? Okay, I'll run with that. You know, so they escape with Juliet as a young child. And to hide her from the, you know, because Montague wants to, pretty much kills off the entire line of Capulets outside of Juliet. And he's trying to find her through the series. So for her, and to claim her birthright, you know, she has to turn, I think, 16. So, yeah, she was about 2.
That's right, because to claim her birthright, she has to be legally old enough, at least anime-wise, looking to fuck. Go ahead.
So, to hide her from, you know, because, as you know, when you slay kings in most animes, you then become king.
Right.
Or prince. They call them princes in this. And Montague becomes the prince of Neo Verona and rules it with an iron fist. And the iron fist also has, like, tack spikes on the outside. So there's no comfort for anybody.
Okay. Gotcha.
Absolutely none.
Right.
So to hide Juliet from, you know, the many eyes of Montague, they dress Juliet up as a boy. And she has to live as a boy. And she has no idea. You know, she's 2 years old. She has no idea why. You know, so okay. No dresses for her, no flower picking, no singing, no birds, no nothing. You're a boy. They give her a boy wig. She wears boy clothes. They change her name to Odin. They make her change her voice to make her sound like a boy. And she can only be herself when she's back in, you know, their hovel of a base. So, you know, 14 years later, it's like 2 days before Juliet's birthday, you know, and she's just kind of like, you know, it's pretty close to my birthday. Can we just tell me what the deal is and why I have to wear boys? You know, because I'm kind of sick of it and I kind of have these boobs and shit. You know, and it's kind of hard to, like...
I sort of have some titties, so I would like to understand why I have to play, like, I don't have these tatas.
So, I mean, like, she just wants to understand why she has to hide her gender from the world, because even some of the people that she lives with do not understand, like, they have no idea that she's a female. Like, only, like, people from the remnants of the Capulet family know that she's female. You know, so she also, on top of, you know, cross-dressing to hide her identity... also likes to be a masked villain, kind of like a Robin Hood of the area in Neo-Verona that they live in. So whenever there's some injustice going on, she puts on this cape. Think tuxedo mask, only red. And by red, I mean like girly maroon.
Oh my God.
You know, and you know, she has these great monologue speeches that are actually a little bit better than tuxedo masks were.
Oh, and you think these most tuxedo masks' speeches sucked?
Oh my God, they did. There was really no point. But anyway, so she helps these destitute people in the area that she lives in. And sometimes she opens her mouth at the wrong time and she upsets the wrong people. You know, and the whole time that, you know, she's doing this behind everybody's back who's protecting her. Not that she realizes that they're protecting her yet, because she has no idea why she has to do what she has to do. And she's being chased by these guards and she, you know, ends up pulling Cordelia into the mess, who was just shopping. And they're on this ledge, and they're, like, about to fall, and Romeo caught a glimpse of the fray and decided that he was going to help. So, no lie, as soon as the floor begins to crack and they begin to fall, you know, a hand goes out and grabs Odin / Juliet / the Red Whirlwind, because they have to give her so many fucking names.
Oh, my God. I'm already confused. I feel so bad for Juliet. Who am I? I'm a bandit. I'm a girl. I'm a boy. I'm a girl who likes boys, but this boy with the... What? I'm a thief?
Yes, exactly.
What?
It's... I mean, literally, they throw a lot at you within the first, like, 4 episodes. And, you know, so when Romeo grabs her, you know, and gets her to safety, and Benvolio, you know, and if you've read the original screenplay, you know Benvolio is a cousin of Romeo. They're related.
Yeah.
They completely skewered all the family ties in this series. So now people are like friends or nobles, and half of them aren't related to who they were supposed to be in the original play. So I'm sitting like, dude, hanging out with your cousin, that's cool. You're my wise and dear friend, but what? No, he's like, you're like second cousin, dude. It's like,
you're
what?
You're family. You know each other.
He's blood, but apparently not in this universe. You know, and he and Benvolio ends up saving Cordelia, and that's a totally different subplot altogether. And when he brings them back down, he's like, man, for a boy, you have very delicate risks, you know, wrists. And, you know, and Odin's like, shut the fuck up, dude. So, like, it's a sensitive business, you know, it's a sensitive matter that I don't want
to talk. So then Romeo probably has to be like, I think I might be gay, right?
Yep, because he kept getting all these weird visions in his head about the Red Whirlwind, because, mind you, Odin's still dressed up as the whirlwind when they meet.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, so Romeo's kind of like, that was really weird.
I think
you
I might like dudes.
Well, not even that. He was just like, what, you know, just very gentle wrist. And he couldn't get this guy out of his mind. And, you know, late in that episode, I think he gets betrothed to Lady Hermione, who was never in the original. They completely created a woman out of thin air. You know,
anime.
They completely fucked it up. But, I mean, it's okay, because they had to move the plot somehow. And they had to give the main love interest a struggle. They had to. So I completely understand why they did it, but nah, I don't know.
No.
And Lady Hermione, you know, very nice, blonde hair, very soft voice. You know, worthy of the title that she has, worthy of being a noble. No, who was like, oh my god, I'm betrothed to Romeo, which means I'm going to be the Princess of Neo-Verona in a couple years when Prince Montague dies. You know, and she's doing all these things to, you know, make, you know, to ferment their, you know, their love betrothal thing. All the while, Romeo is thinking about the Red Whirlwind, and you're like, okay, so the dude's gay. That's cool. You know, and he just realizes that he's not in love with Hermione. Now, he didn't say that he's in love with the Red Whirlwind, but he's like, I don't feel what I think I'm supposed to feel. You know, and you kind of feel bad for Romeo when you go through this whole series. You know, in all the adaptations of it that we've seen, Romeo has always kind of seemed very cocksure about every choice that he makes. I'm in love with Juliet. We're done. I will fight for her. Done. I got exiled for her. Done. You know, like, he was very, okay, this was my choice. I lived with it.
Right.
And in this series, Romeo was just kind of like, I'm the lapdog to my father. I just do whatever he says. I'm very insecure.
That is not a Romeo.
Yes. I mean, in the second
part... That is a bitchio.
In the second season, he starts to get better. But, I mean, in the first season, I'm like, I don't know why Juliet wants all up in his shit. I'm like, he's a pussy. He's a big pussy. And I'm like, no. I'm like, this doesn't work. It doesn't work for me. At all. But anyway, I mean, I let it go.
So, big really pussy did. Does not work for Pandalicious. All right.
And I just let it go. And, I mean, and they even put Shakespeare into the play. Like, into the series. I'm sorry, not
what?
Play. Yes. So let me make sure everyone understands. So, we have the grueling families.
Uh-huh.
Montague was pretty much slayed. Everybody from the Capulet family, even the Loyalists, even people who were not of the blood, who were supporters of the Capulets, were pretty much slain.
Okay.
And anyone who made it out, you know, has been hiding for the last 14 years. Waiting for Juliet to become 16 so that she can claim her birthright and, you know, fight back against Montague and reclaim her throne because she was the ruling family of Neo-Verona. Her family was.
Okay.
So she's the only one left. She has no idea that she has this whole, like, lineage of revenge that she's going to have to, like, see through once she's 16.
Uh-huh.
And let me tell you, when they break that news to her, she pretty much, like, faints. And she's like, are you kidding me? Really? And it's really funny because Juliet figures out that Romeo is part of the family that slaughtered hers. So for a while, she's trying to break it off with Romeo because she's like, I can't love you because I'm going to eventually have to either kill all your family but you or all your family and you. You know, and Romeo's just like, I don't understand, and I just want us to be together, and blah, 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 I'm a bitch, blah, 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 I'm a bitch, and can you tell I wasn't a great fan of his, the choice of how they decided to paint Romeo.
No.
Not at all.
Wouldn't have guessed it.
So, I mean, so they've already taken the concept of Romeo and Juliet, put it in a blender, and picked up every third word.
Turns out that it will blend, but what it blends into is not a tasty beverage.
Well, no, because I actually really enjoyed it. In terms of action and stuff, I really did enjoy the anime. But, I mean, I like to read. I'm a big fan of Shakespeare. So, I mean, I was hoping to see a stronger tie between the original movie and the series. And
would you have enjoyed it more if it wasn't Romeo x Juliet, but, you know, Yuki versus, you know, Yuki x Sachi?
Yeah, I think.
You know, and it was just a story that didn't even claim any ties.
Yes, I think I would have enjoyed that a lot better. So, I mean, okay, so we understand the grueling families. We understand that, you know, she needs to, you know, reclaim her throne and get her city back. And, you know, that's where that whole justice thing comes in. And, you know, Montague, you see Prince Montague, you know, Romeo's father, pretty much descend into madness. And I actually really kind of liked that. And I'm not going to spoil all of it because, you know, there are so many things going on with him that at the very end, you're like, well, no wonder why he's an asshole. Like, there's always a reason. There's always a reason.
You hope there's always a reason for the douchebaggery.
And so, I mean, at the very end of it, because, you know, Neo-Verona is, like, blossoming and has all this food, and it's bountiful there. But if you're anywhere other than Neo-Verona, it's like a wasteland, and you don't understand why. I'm like, you know, people are farming and shit. There's water. Why is the world, like, slowly receding into itself? And you find out, you know, that the Capulets have been the reigning family for as long as, you know, history has foretold. And the reason is this giant tree.
Tree of life.
Listen, there's this giant tree underneath the Capulet castle,
mm-hmm.
or now Montague
mm-hmm.
castle. And the women of the Capulet family, like, they get marked on their 16th birthday with this emblem that looks much like the tree, actually. And they get sacrificed to the tree to sustain the life of Neo, like, of the world, actually. Because the roots of this tree extend throughout the entire world. So for as long as history has dictated, a female Capulet has been sacrificed to this tree in order to keep the world beautiful. So think about it. They've slaughtered all of the Capulet family but one. Montague's had no idea that this was going on. And when he inherited the castle and he inherited the tree, he's like, well, how do I get this thing to work? You know, because it was starting to wither and die. You know, and there's this, they have Ophelia, which I think is really funny because Ophelia was in, what was it? Was it Hamlet?
Hamlet.
Yeah, Ophelia. And this entity called Ophelia guards over the tree called Aeschylus. And, you know, she's kind of weird looking. And I think she's supposed to, like, be a, like a humanoid form of the essence of the tree. Because she's always talking about the tree. You know, and she was like, you know, Montague, I told you. I warned you about your rage against the Capulets and da-da-da-da-da. I warned you, I warned you, I warned you. You know, and he's just like, oh, shut up, bitch. And, you know, I'll figure this out. I'm the true ruler, blah, 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 blah. And he has no idea that this rite of the Capulets has been going on. And half of the Capulets didn't even know by the end of the series. So, you know, 16 years old, she gets this emblem. She thinks it's a bruise. She has no idea. Yeah, she's got no idea what's going to happen to her. You know, and she, you know, she grows into the fact that she wants to create a better Neo Verona and a better world. She wants to have a world where her and Romeo can live together and not have to worry about their names and not have to worry about the bloodshed and all the vengeance and all that. Juliet was very grown up for a series, especially because if you've read the play, she was actually more of the, you know, I'm under daddy's thumb, blah, 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 what do I do, what do I do? Oh, I'm just going to die. And they completely changed the personas around. So, I mean, kudos for making Juliet a very strong feminine character, but completely against her original concept, which I was a little icky about. But anyway.
That's why it's loosely buh on a
Exactly. So, I mean, and the exile does happen with Romeo. He does get exiled to this, like, rock quarry where he, you know, then becomes friends after a lot of torment, you know, from the quarry workers. And he decides that he's going to, you know, create a village for them so that they can bring their families and it'd be where him and Juliet will live for the rest of their lives. Because he's naive and has no idea how the story goes. Maybe that Romeo should have read the original so he would have had an idea. But anyway, very, very end, Juliet gets all of her supporters, some of the nobles all together. You know, and look, we're going to ransack the castle. We're going to get my birthright back and everything's going to be great. And she keeps having these visions and she feels the Aeschylus calling to her and she doesn't understand what it is. No one knows what's going on with that. And finally, Ophelia's like, yes, the tree sustains all life. And if you die before you sacrifice yourself to this tree, because apparently Neo Verona and the world is floating above in the sky. And if she doesn't sacrifice herself
soon. Sky people.
I mean, yeah. I mean, needless to say, if she doesn't sacrifice herself for the good of all mankind, mankind will plummet from the sky. So she has no idea what this really means. You know, she's 60 years old. She just wants to get laid and be in love and be a girl. And she's got to confront all this stuff. So, I mean,
Yeah, you lost me. I'm just going to let you know right now. Oh, you lost me like 4 episodes ago.
Oh, my. It's a mess. But it's an entertaining mess is what I'm trying to say. But needless to say, you know, figure it out, because they do have to keep the main premise of the story. So obviously Romeo and Juliet both do die. It happens.
Spoiler!
I don't even care. I really don't care at this point that I spoiled it. Not really. Because, you know, they already kind of blended way too many things of Shakespeare. They actually put him in the story as this, like, foppish playwright for a family of Montague. Like, they really kind of messed it up. I mean, they made it work for what they were going to do. But if you're a diehard playwright fan, as, say, I am, I was kind of like, you know, what? Really? No. That's not how this is... Oh, okay. Oh, and now there's a giant tree. Like, they threw that
in. A giant tree of life.
Yeah, that apparent... Yes. So, I mean, let me finish spoiling it. So, Ophelia, because she... Ophelia wants Juliet to sacrifice herself to the tree for the sake of mankind.
Right.
You know, and Romeo's like, I just want to be with her. And he's like, she's like, shut up, little boy. You have no idea what you're talking about, which, you know, I completely understand that line. If you've seen the series, you'd understand, too. And she kills Romeo. Like, Romeo kills her like it's one of those standoff things, and they both lunge at each other. You know, and he kills her first, but her hand's, like, through his chest plate. So, you know, he's dying.
Right.
You know, and he's just like, you know, I wanted to make a world for us, and I'm sorry that, you know, I couldn't do that, and blah, 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 and he dies. And Romeo and Juliet's like, oh, fuck no. She's like, I was going to sacrifice myself first and you, to make this world good for you, and now that you're not in it, well, now I don't want to be in it. You know, and mind you, all of her loyal subjects are like, you could finally rule Verona. And she's like, nope. She's like, that's not what my destiny was. My destiny was to sacrifice myself. You know, and she does. She sacrifices herself to this tree. And what happens in the ending credits is Neo Verona and the world, because, I mean, outside of Neo Verona, there's really not too many cities that are prospering, really. You see it begin to wither away, and it turns into an island. And as the city is falling, the city's still falling, plummeting from the sky, but it lands in water. And it becomes an island of paradise. And everybody apparently becomes, like, happy. After all that. So there's no ruling families. Romeo and Juliet are happy in heaven or wherever the fuck they go. And Benvolio and Cordelia get married.
And the end.
The end. And you're just kind of like, what?
What?
That's really my ending. I was
what?
Like,
wait, what?
So, yeah. But I mean, entertaining, action, loved it. I mean,
the rest of the shit that they fucked up, not so much.
I just don't understand. Like, I really wish they made the idea of the tree known way before the second season. Because I was sitting there going, I'm like, all right, so if this is just going to be grueling families, then, you know, there's so much more should be going on here. Like, we should be seeing more going on with, you know, the rise of the Capulet, you know, loyalists coming up and the tension between Montague. Like, you should see more of that and more of the original concept of Romeo and Juliet, but they completely flipped the script. But I mean, it was enjoyable. And I mean, I got it on Amazon for wicked cheap. I mean, it's only really 4 DVDs long of 6 episodes. It's a very short series. They didn't expand it, and frankly,
and it's probably a good thing.
Yeah, I don't know how they would have.
Really. Well, you got a tree of life, you got a girl dressing as a boy that's getting a boy in love with her, him.
Romeo figures out that she's a she. Because
yeah, I figured as much.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the only other thing that you could add in there that you were actually missing was, in fact, incest. That's the only anime cliche.
We'll see.
Because you've got Supergirl with a magical power. Sure, she's got to sacrifice herself for it.
That's usually how that goes.
Right. But you've got Supergirl with a magical power. You've got the cross-dressing.
Yep.
Okay, you've got people in the sky, land in the sky, tree of life. So you've got the whole nature versus nurture, man versus wild thing. Okay, you threw the Shakespeare in there, so you got, you know.
Oh, yeah, and they all speak in, you know, kind of old tongue.
English speak, yeah. Okay, so you've got that homage thrown in there. But you also got a little bit of the future thrown in because they are in the sky.
I know, and Neo Verona.
And it's Neo Verona. So, I mean, you've pretty much got every anime cliche in there. The only thing that you're missing, really, is either incest or tentacle rape.
See, and I mean
then you would have had the tree.
The tree roots were fucking people up, and they were kind of like tentacles.
Yeah, so, but they didn't actually penetrate anyone.
Well, as far as we know.
Yeah.
And the incest, because, I mean, have you noticed of everyone that I've mentioned, I never really mentioned Tybalt while talking.
Ah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's in the series, and I'm like, all right, well, we already know that Romeo's going to kill Tybalt. Not at all. They made Tybalt Romeo's half-brother.
What?
So, yeah. Oh, this is a hoot. So we all know Tybalt was a member of the House of Capulet. He was Juliet's cousin.
Yes.
And he is.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Wait.
Can you picture it? Can you picture it? All right. So they actually make Tybalt kind of like a badass, and you have no idea where his loyalties lie. And you really, I mean, knowing by his name, I instantly was like, okay, he's part of Capulet House. He's totally going to be like on Juliet's side. And he's actually kind of on his own side, because what happens is Montague, and I'm going to partially disrupt this too. Montague was a bastard of one of the Capulet kings. So Montague was actually
a Capulet.
A Capulet. This king of you know, Capulet, this prince of Capulet, got busy with the hoe, and the hoe had a baby.
Uh-huh.
Montague.
Yeah.
And the mother didn't tell him at all until she was, like, dying, which always...
Always
happens.
Yes, big event. Mm-hmm.
So he decides that he is going to, you know, get back at the Capulet family.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he starts slaughtering his way through the family. Because, like I said, if you kill someone, you end up taking on their rank.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he becomes like a you know, like an errand boy for a Capulet house. He starts to, you know, learn the ways, learn the family. And once he's old enough, he becomes like partially a politician of their Senate, quote unquote, the like thing. And he's at a party and he meets Tybalt's mom. And he, like, woos her into having a child. And that's who Tybalt is. So Tybalt's actually Capulet, Montague Capulet, if you really want to play with that a little bit.
All right. So we have the actual incest. So I can go ahead and check that box off.
Yeah, we do.
Yes.
So, I mean, so he's kind of a half-breed. And he hates his father. And, you know, is obviously the half-brother. He's the half-brother of Romeo. And the cousin of Juliet, so obviously Romeo and Juliet getting together is kind of like...
Yep, so we'll go ahead and we'll check that box too. So we've got double incest, which actually is the equivalent of tentacle rape. So
yeah,
we've cleared it all.
Yeah. But I mean, entertaining, yes. Music choice, I loved it. I mean, like I said, there were so many plot holes going on and, you know, they punched so many holes in the original adaptation that... On continuity, you're kind of like, no.
Expecting Romeo x Juliet to have really anything in common with the Romeo and Juliet that you know and love and have read, you will be disappointed in that aspect. That's what you're basically saying.
Yep. So I would say adapt the DBZ philosophy and enjoy it for whatever it is.
Which will usually be over 9,000.
Yep.
And just accept that.
But I mean, I said, for anime, I mean, this was still good. Like, I mean, I don't feel that this was very cookie cutter. I mean, yes, it was loosely based.
Okay, so then to get down to the brass tacks of it, rent, buy, wouldn't suck as a gift.
It doesn't suck if you have the money. It wouldn't suck as a gift.
Okay,
it wouldn't suck as a gift. And because this was from an Amazon gift card given by you, Ninja, this was, in fact, a gift from you. So, yeah, it would not suck as a gift.
Fair enough.
It would not suck as a gift. Maria watches over us? Bye. If you like that stuff. That would also not suck as a gift if you didn't know anything about it. But if you knew about it and you weren't sure, buy it. You won't be disappointed with that. And, like I said, Romeo x Juliet wouldn't suck as a gift.
All right, well, let's end this on some gaming stuff then.
Okay. Have you played any?
As a matter of fact, I have. Finally got some time between squaring some things away with customer service stuff, which it was epic. I still am not done yet. But when I finish all of it, there will be like this epic thing that I'm going to write. It's probably going to be in the next issue of our magazine. So I'm going to make sure that you pick up that copy because I want to talk about customer service in the tech industry, or lack thereof, but that's another point. When I finished with all of that and took a break, I actually did play some video games.
Okay.
Because my Xbox finally came back. I gotta say, I'm gonna take the finally out of that. I was surprised. I really didn't expect to get it back until about the first week of August. As any of you that have followed me on Twitter, which you should because I'm awesome, just ask my ass mom, I had another red ring, so I had to send my Xbox back to Texas. They received it. I've been watching the process on the website of how it was going along in the repair. And it was really funny because literally the day that they said that they received it, by the middle of the day, they're like, yep, your repair's done. I was like, great. Okay, well, I'll wait to see when they say they're going to ship it back to me. And for like 3 days, it just kept saying, your repair's done, your repair's done. I'm like, okay, well, when are you going to move the little notch over to the, you know, item shipped back? Because I'm waiting for my tracking number. I don't get anything. For 3 days. On the fourth day, damn Xbox arrived at the door, and I just happened to be homesick that day. So I was like, oh, score one for me. I'm here to sign for it. So got my Xbox back up and running on Friday. And literally, I went to GameStop. I picked up Crackdown 2 because before my Xbox Red ringed, I'd been playing the demo like crazy and I was really enjoying the game. I love Crackdown 1. It's one of my games that I go back to whenever I just need, you know, to blow up stuff for no reason. You know, other than just be blowing up stuff. Like, I don't want to go through a campaign. I don't want to find out the inner turmoil behind this character. I just want a character that has a bazooka or the ability to pick up a car and throw it. And I just want to pick up a car and throw it. That's what I love about Crackdown 1. Crackdown 2 brings more of the same, except it's a little bit different. There's a little bit more. And I gotta, I'm going to take my hat off right now to Ruffian Games. I really didn't think that you could improve on Crackdown in a way that would make it better. But Crackdown 2 is definitely a better experience, at least on the solo campaign, because I haven't done any of the co-op stuff yet. But on the solo campaign, it's definitely got more depth to it than the first game. So you're still in the same city, and you're still an agent in the agency. Okay, you are a clone, though. And it turns out that the city has just gone completely to shit.
Really?
It's basically just gone all downhill. So before, you were battling rival gangs that were taking over the city. Now there's really only one quote-unquote gang left, the Cell. Because the biggest issue in the city now is not necessarily the gang, but there's this nasty little virus that's kind of spreading among people and turning them into these, well, I don't want to call them zombies, but they basically are meta-humans.
Oh, boy.
And they just like to kill and smash things. But they only come out at night because by dawn, if they're out, like a vampire is supposed
to. They glitter?
No. Like a vampire in the sun.
Okay.
And so you basically have these two things that are going on. That during the day you're fighting cell terrorists.
And at night you're fighting vampires.
And at night you're fighting these metahumans and cell terrorists.
Oh, well, you're just never.
Okay, and your goal is to basically get these probes that the agency has been working on that destroy the havens for the metahumans. And hopefully, which, by the way, the metahumans are called freaks by the agency.
Because they glitter in the sunlight.
They don't glitter in the sunlight. They blow up and turn into, like, lava pools, and then they disappear.
Well, that's good.
But the interesting mechanic around that is that you have this other layer of stuff that's going on in between your actual story goals. Because in Crackdown, you still have all the agility races that you can do. So you can do the car races to get your driving skills up. You can go after the height orbs in order to get your agility up. You can do more hand-to-hand combat in order to get your combos and strength up. So you can focus on those things in addition to going through the thing that actually drives the story plot points forward, which is reclaiming all of this technology for the agency in hopes of being able to wipe out both the freaks and ultimately Cell. But I'm sure there's something really going on there.
Wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. So you've got that layer of intrigue. But what I like with the addition of the freaks is that there's also some morality things that come into play with freaks. So if you're walking around at night and there are people that are getting attacked by freaks, you'll want to step in some more, because the more that you protect the people from freaks, the more that people, one,
will give you things.
Not necessarily. I haven't gotten to that point yet to see if that happens or not. But you definitely want to win over hearts and minds, because you want the people to trust the agency more and want to lend support to the agency more.
Okay.
So you have a little bit of the morality stuff, but not on the level of, say, what goes on in, like, Red Dead Redemption.
All right.
So you have a hint of that, but you can also use, you know, the freaks just to work on a specific thing that you want to build up. So let's say that you want to work on your strength. Like, I wanted to get to level 3 of my strength early on. So I would just find spawn points for freaks and just start taking them out just using melee attacks so that I could get that worked up. So you have that mechanic. When I want to work on, for instance, my skills with guns, I'll find cell spots and just let them send up flares to get more cell agents to show up so I can take them out with guns so I can get that skill up. So you can basically focus on whatever skill it is that you want to work on, kind of like an RPG, but because it's not turn-based, it's just all free-forming action, you really feel like you control the development of your agent.
Okay.
As opposed to the story, you know, driving the development of your agent. Like, when you play in Kingdom Hearts, there comes a point where you really don't get to choose the next development path of your character. It gets chosen for you. Like, you get forced into some keyblades, whether you want them or not, in Kingdom Hearts.
Right.
Well, with Crackdown, I don't really feel like I get forced into developing my character yet, in a specific way. Like, driving, I suck at in Crackdown, and I really didn't want to have to develop my driving skills in order to complete the story. And you don't have to.
Oh, well, that's good.
Same thing abides in Crackdown, too. It'll be interesting to see, you know, what multiplayer is like for me, because one of the things that you can do on any of the things that you do in your campaign is multiplayer is integrated. So before in Crackdown, you could only do multiplayer in Crackdown 1 if you had somebody with another system that could do the iLink thing. Which sucked, because not everybody travels around with their Xbox, an extra TV, and the same copy of the game that you're playing.
Right.
That way. Well, Ruffian has really reworked the multiplayer, and so now as you start any campaign, you can actually say, hey, I want to do this on my own, or you can, quote-unquote, recruit other agents. And that allows you to have any of your friends or be thrown into matchmaking and have anyone who's playing the game join you as an agent so that you can actually collectively play through your single-player campaign, basically,
right.
Story mode. So I can bring you in, let's say, as I'm doing this next mission, and set you off on one set of tactics, like taking out the cell grouping, so I can get around the freaks and get to the objective. Or you can choose to go it all on your own.
Nice.
So it's a really interesting way, I think, of bringing multiplayer into the game without making it the full focus, like its own mode. It's basically just ad hoc multiplayer. For the story mode, you can do all kinds of different trials as well, or just fractioned off multiplayer things if you want to. But there are achievements for actually bringing multiplayer in. There are also achievements for doing things all on your own. There are avatar achievements. One of the things that was really funny is that literally for just pressing the start button of the game, you get an achievement.
For real?
Yeah, but it's an avatar achievement.
All right.
And so I thought that was cool. The game definitely has a lot of regular achievements as well as avatar achievements. So it really feels like Ruffian has taken the time to try and craft a great experience all around. Whether you have a group of people that you like to play with, or you just like to be by yourself on things, there are balanced achievements both on the avatar level as well as the game level. Hell, there are even achievements that you can get for just doing the demo.
Wow.
That carry over. So it's one of the first games that I can even think of that has had demo achievements. Most of the demo achievements have to do with multiplayer. So if you haven't picked up the demo, definitely pick up the demo and definitely try to get your friends involved. If you're an achievement whore, you're already doing this. But even if you're not an achievement whore, I think that Crackdown 2 is definitely going to be one of the games that people in the industry talk about all the way through holiday. It's just being a fun experience.
Now, wait, so does Crackdown 2, in terms of story, follow up right after Crackdown 1, or is it a completely different, like...
It follows 1. So as you start the game...
I've never played 1, and I was thinking about grabbing 2.
But here's the thing,
like,
you don't have to play 1 to enjoy 2.
Oh, all right, then.
Because literally the intro video of 2 explains what happened in 1, all you need to know. Because pretty much all that happened in 1 was, holy shit, the city's overrun with gangs. Stop them.
That's the premise.
That's it. And it's what I loved about the game, because it was simple. Pick a dude, develop your dude, basically try to get to the point where you're just so badass, it's ridiculous, and then just wipe out gangs. Like, I spent one day in Crackdown 1 literally just trying to find all of the agility orbs, which are jumping and speed orbs, so that I could leap a Ferris wheel.
Just for fun. Wow. Okay. So
it really was the first for me, really true, you know, open sandbox game that I played. Because you don't have to do dick with the story if you don't want to. If you
so
just
wait, can you do vagina instead of dick?
What? I don't even know what that means. But you don't have to ever do anything to promote the story forward. The narrator will start picking on you for not doing it.
But you don't.
Okay,
you
and he'll basically say, hey, agent, do your job. And you just be like, nah, screw you. Oh. I want to jump the Ferris wheel. So. It is definitely very, very open box. If you want to fly through the story, you can fly through the story. And after the story's done, you can still roam around the city, cleaning up the city.
Or jumping the Ferris wheel.
For the first one. I haven't completed the second one, so I don't know what your options are after the story is completed. But I bet it'll be very similar. So Crackdown will definitely be a game for a lot of people that when they just want to have some mindless fun.
I like mindless fun.
That it will be a solid game to do that with. When you purchase the game new, there is some redeemable codes in the box, one of which allows you to have the air support helicopter as a toy for your avatar. Which, you know, is pretty neat. You know, I like games that take advantage of the NXE extras, you know, being able to get gear for your avatar to basically promote the game that you're playing. You know, it's great marketing. Buy a game, get a hoodie with our logo for your avatar. Play dress up, get a toy that represents this big mechanical thing in our game that's really integral to the story, you know. I can't wait to get my hands on the next Assassin's Creed game because I'm hoping the avatar gear that right now they really want me to pay for
will be redeemable. Have rewards.
Yeah. That would be nice. Well, so I got to say, as far as Crackdown 2 is concerned, I'm only maybe 3 hours in of just mind-numbing fun because I really haven't done much to promote the story forward. It's definitely worth a buy for me. You know, if you've got a birthday or a graduation or anything coming up, it definitely wouldn't suck as a gift. So, Ruffian, big ups to you guys. Absolutely love it.
Bum-a-bum-bum-bum, she's loving it.
And I'm back on Xbox Live, so if you have it and you want to do some multiplayer, you know the gamer tag, find me. I'm still kind of noobish at it, though, so I might suck. But find me anyway. So with that, I'm going to have to say, make sure that you keep visiting us on the website, that you check out our magazine and buy it. You can do both individual issue purchase now as well as subscription. $36 gets you 6 kick-ass issues as well as digital's copy.
And ponies.
No, no ponies. Stop promising people shit we can't deliver. I can't even buy myself a pony. I'm not buying internet people ponies. But I will share the awesome with you. So make sure that you check that out, landofesh.com. That's LANDOFESH.com. It has all the information about the magazine, links to buy the subscription or just buy an individual issue. So check that out. We're working on the next one. It's going to be coming out soon, and it's already looking dope. So make sure that you cop that. Also, check us out on our website, www.electricsisterhood.com, or you can use our short address, which is
esh.mobi. That's esh.mobi. The short address will bounce it along one. You can check out any articles that have been written within the week. If you have any questions about those articles or even just questions for us, you can email us at questions@esh.mobi. If you aren't listening to us on iTunes, please just subscribe and get it over with.
Make sure that you get the hotness, the freshness, the ashness right when it drops. Subscribe in iTunes, and as soon as the new episodes hit the internet, boom, like that, you'll have them.
And I mean, if you really don't want to do that, you can plug us into any RSS reader or any podcast search engine. Please also look out for some great shows that come out of our camp.
That's right. We are not the only things that exist in the land of Esh. Oh, no, no. There are other shows. There are other websites. And you need to make sure that you're visiting them and let them know that you like what they do and that you're interested in what they do, because they, like us, love the love. So while you have new stuff from us on the website and new podcast episodes from us every single Monday, on Tuesday, there's a brand new episode of the Boston Bash Brigade podcast, which is co-hosted by our very own King Baby Duck. The Bastard Crew is awesome, and they offer us some things with a slightly, okay, well, very different take than what we have on them. So you want to make sure that you're hitting them up and checking them out. Then on Wednesdays, boom, shakalaka, you got a new episode of the Geek Aggro podcast, co-hosted by our very own Deuces Wild. And on the Geek Aggro website, you got all kinds of stuff about shit we just don't talk about here.
Kablamma!
So right there, we get your nerd covered. We cultivate your nerdishness. And if that's not enough, we'll make sure that you're just checking in on the website, that you're following us on Twitter, that you peep what we're doing on the Facebook and what we're doing on the Flickr and what we're doing on the YouTube, because we've got shit everywhere. Just check it out. We got you covered. We got you.
Yep.
We're not going to let you fall.
Well, we might, and then we'll laugh, but then we'll pick you up and give you a...
No,
a
you can trust us. We won't let you fall.
We'll give you some ice cream if it does happen, though.
We'll totally give you ice cream, though, if we let you fall.
And I'll get you some marshmallows.
Maybe we'll put some chocolate sauce on it. Maybe.
Oh, maybe. My God, yes.
Okay, maybe. But we're not promising anything.
Oh.
So, with all of that out of the way, I guess I just have to ask. Sis, you got any shit you dig this week?
I dig Esh.
You can't just dig your own shit. I mean,
I dig Esh and I dig penguins.
All right, I want to ask.
And clouds. I dig clouds.
I want to ask, but my soul tells me I don't.
All right, well then, what do you dig instead?
Do
you dig penguins too? Because that'd be so dope right now.
I mean, I don't have anything against penguins, but first shit I dig, like, this week, I'm going to have to go with David Bowie pants. More importantly, I'm going to have to go with David Bowie in David Bowie pants.
I was about to say, because David Bowie pants alone are just pants.
Yeah, so that's why I corrected it. David Bowie in David Bowie pants.
All right, then. That's definitely something to dig.
Yeah, yeah, I dig that so much it hurts, kind of.
But well, those pants, you've seen those pants?
I have.
Sure they hurt.
One of my most favorite things to watch whenever I'm not feeling well
is Labyrinth.
Is Labyrinth, which I watched this weekend, because as you can tell from my voice, I'm a little under the weather. And I gotta tell ya,
that did the trick.
David Bowie in David Bowie pants always makes you feel better, or at least makes you forget that you don't feel well. So thank you, David Bowie, in your David Bowie pants.
God bless your pants, David.
We salute you and your love of the chocolate lady.
Yep, we're very... See, I dig that. I dig dudes who dig chocolate ladies.
Well, with that, there's nothing else to say except I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
We're out of here for this week.
See you next week.